is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Okay, Kelsey, we are ready. You capturing this?
I am.
I mean, I'm into this. I would record with a dog any day.
We totally should.
Well, Kelsey, you might actually lose your place as a co-host. Me and Chester might start a podcast. How's that sound, Chester? Chester's so into it.
I'm such a fan
He's
of
down, Chester, baby.
I mean, it sounds like. I mean, is Chester a character on yours?
On in what?
In your podcast? Does Chester ever show up?
He does. Many times he does show up.
Chester, you're going to be a podcast star. He literally is at my computer. It's
He's
so cute.
A pod dog.
He does. He's like.
He's ready to go. Get them levels, Chest.
4.
Podcast. We're making a podcast about 30 Rock. Podcast. We're making a podcast about 30 Rock. We're calling it Talk 30 to Me. It is great.
Hi, everyone.
Do it.
Hi, guys. I'm Kelsey.
I'm Kimmy.
And this is Talk 30 Rock to Me.
Talk 30 Rock to Me, a podcast that is a love letter to Tina Fey, to 30 Rock, to comedy, and just all things funny.
Amen.
But mainly 30 Rock.
Mainly 30 Rock. Mostly 30. Well, like 75% 30 Rock, probably, if we're honest about it.
Before we get started, we need to make our plugs.
I'm doing them.
Yes, because I always forget them, so I point at you.
You can start by supporting us by going to boardwalkaudio.com/talk30rock to me. Click on the support our artist button and it'll take you to Amazon and you can buy lots of fun things. I bought a roll of 200 feet of black butcher paper this morning.
Ooh.
So you can buy everything on Amazon.
Kelsey's a butcher. I know we'd be really, really quiet.
That's a butcher. True?
Am I a butcher? No. Did I buy butcher paper? Yes.
All right.
I have to decorate a very large room. And all right. That's one
okay.
of them.
Wouldn't that be great if she were a butcher, though? Like, I'd be so into that.
I thought I had the hookup.
Yeah. I know. Like,
here's a slab of meat.
A steak, Kelsey. A steak.
I don't like steak. I don't think about steak.
Oh.
You can also support us by subscribing to our podcast. You can follow us on social media. You can review us. You can rate us. You can love us. You can send us fun things. It's great.
We love it. We like it. We talk about it. She'll send me Snapchats with the nice. It's not Snapchat. Snaps of like the nice things you say to us during the week.
Screenshots.
Screenshots.
Is the word you're looking for. It's great.
I swear I'm a millennial and I know what these things are. So
we are joined again today by the very very funny Mr. Scott Boxenbaum.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Scott.
How you doing, guys?
Welcome back.
Thank you for participating in our podcast and being down to talk about 30 Rock. I do have actually one question for you before. Wait, I know Kelsey has a question.
You can learn more about Scott from our first episode we had him on, which is on Senor Macho Solo. You can hear some more about some of the things he's working on and a little bit more. We'll find out a little more about him right now too.
Cool,
but you
cool.
can listen to part one a while ago.
That's a really good thing to say and I'm glad you said it. No, I just wanted to know, so you've had your podcast right on for a long time. Do you have a particular episode that you're proud of or that you love or the interview just was like something really special that you can tell us about?
I really like the interview with Michael Price, who is I don't know if he's a former Simpsons writer or he's still with the Simpsons as a producer. He is the showrunner and co-creator of F is for Family.
Got it.
And I really love that episode. It's funny. There's a lot of great stories. There's a really interesting origin story for that guy. And it's a really great look into how the process of working at the Simpsons is and how he... the writing process and the creation process for a cable animated show, what that's like, because that's a unique kind of animal right there.
Yeah. No, I need to watch F is for Family. I haven't watched it yet. And
pretty good.
I want to check it out because I like Bill Burr and I think he's deeply funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I really like that one. Although I did two episodes with a guy named Brent Forrester, who is a longtime writer for The Simpsons, King of the Hill. He was running the room at The Office for a while, I believe.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been around the horn a while, and he is a very enthusiastic guy, loves to talk about comedy writing, and I did two episodes with him because he's a great talker, and he's running the room at Love for Netflix.
Oh, he's running Love.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is a different animal for him because that's an example of a dramedy and he's more of a straight up comedy guy.
Mm-hmm.
But has a lot to say about writing and joke writing and everything. It's very instructive.
I'm going to check it out. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, real enthusiastic, cool guy.
That's really cool. That would be such a weird switch to start at to start in like a very classic comedy and then to go to something like Love, because Love is funny and there's really good joke building and like plot building on that show, but it isn't a jokey show in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's very serialized.
Yeah.
It's not The Simpsons or King of the Hill where it's one-offs, mm-hmm. you know, what they call... People who aren't familiar, there's really two kinds of shows. There's self-contained shows like The Simpsons or King of the Hill or South Park, where each episode is its own reality. Mm-hmm. And then there's serialized shows where you have character arcs. So that would be, you know, Love.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Cool. Scott, can you talk a little bit about maybe shows that they've influenced you in your style of writing, the things that you think are funny?
I always loved Freaks and Geeks and Arrested mm-hmm. Development. You know,
God
Freaks and Geeks,
shows.
Again, was more of a dramedy. I like the tone of Freaks and Geeks mm-hmm. very much. But what Arrested Development did is they kind of did a little bit of that, and then they added more jokes.
Yeah.
So that sort of cinematic tone... I thought Malcolm in the Middle was an incredibly underrated show.
We don't talk about that one very much anymore.
Such a good show.
I've watched a handful of episodes, but when I read Bryan Cranston's autobiography, it made me want to go back through and watch it.
And it's really weird, the shows we still talk about, we don't talk about Malcolm in the Middle, we don't talk about Scrubs, and I haven't revisited Scrubs, but it's interesting how these comedies that were really influential then aren't really in the conversation anymore.
Malcolm in the Middle is kind of a forgotten show that will come back in people's minds. Like, I don't know if has it been put on Netflix yet?
No,
I thought I've seen it pop up. I'm pretty sure.
Why are we talking about it?
They may have like I don't know if they've exhausted their syndication potential, but when it comes back on Netflix or when it gets on Netflix, I think people will appreciate it, because I think Linwood Boomer was a really brilliant. Was he's still around? He's a brilliant writer. Is that his name, Linwood Boomer?
God knows.
Yeah, I don't want to butcher his name.
It is on Netflix.
Oh, it is. Good.
Seven seasons.
If people haven't seen it, it's a great show. It matured as the characters grew up, and it ended when it should have ended. It didn't overdo their run. Arrested Development, like I said, is a huge influence on me. Cheers, I'll still watch the pilot.
Cheers,
when I need inspiration,
because I'm slowly and surely going through Cheers right now, and it's so good.
Well, it's an interesting show, because as a writer, it almost feels like this is calculus and I'm writing algebra. Like, how do they do this? It's like magical how good it is, and it holds up. I think some of the Golden Girls stuff is still really funny, you know? What else have I been watching that I love? The Larry Sanders Show is dead on my tone.
You're hitting Kimmy's like
my HBO access, and I can't watch it right now.
It's on Netflix, isn't it?
The Larry Sanders Show? It's an HBO show. I don't think so.
No, I think they put the episodes.
If it's on there and I haven't known, I'm going to cry.
I think it's on Netflix, but like it, I'll still watch old episodes of that.
It's brilliant. It's so brilliant. I don't know.
It's the first type show of its type. You know,
and it's such a godfather to 30 Rock in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it launched a lot of really amazing careers. I think as far as shows that kind of mix drama and comedy, I think Better Call Saul is great. It's a little slow at times, but when it ramps up, it's great. I also think that Breaking Bad was a really funny show in a lot of ways. I don't think it's appreciated for how funny it is.
But would you call that a comedy, or is that more the drama?
No,
that's
I don't
not
think
my, it's
not a
that's
comedy.
That's the drama
but has,
that but has funny characters in it.
I've laughed out loud at some of the things. I mean, I think even The Sopranos is a drama.
Or like The Wire, too. Like, there's some funny lines in
The
Wire.
Yeah, there's hilarious lines in that. They're funnier than a lot of sitcoms, you know? I haven't been watching a lot of three-camera sitcoms lately. Like, I don't know. What do you guys like? Maybe there's some things
you've pretty much hit. I'm a huge West Wing fan. I've never watched Studio 60, but West Wing is
you can't watch it. We're going to save it.
I know.
Please save it.
I know.
I want to watch it together.
It's an amazing misfire.
Exactly.
You're like, what is this? It doesn't know what it is. You know.
But it's also super winning. I don't know. I love it, but you're completely right. It did a complete misfire. It took such gravitas to comedy, and it kind of missed the point.
I wanted to punch the newsroom in the balls.
Well, we all felt that way.
Yeah. I wanted to punch it in the balls.
Everyone felt that way.
It was screaming at me every time I turned on the TV.
But
what I mean, I think Veep which I'm not always into because it's sometimes it's hard to identify with any of the characters because they're all pieces of
so
shit.
Terrible. Right.
But it's so funny. The writing is so crisp and there is no better joke writing show on TV.
Meep. Their process is fascinating, too, the way they write and then improv and rewrite.
Oh, well, how does that work?
Was that like Parks and Rec, too? That's like the
Parks and Rec did it, but not to the extent Veep does.
They improv and rewrite?
They basically write the show, and then they work. They bring in the entire cast, and they improv the scenes. They go back and forth, and then they will rewrite all of it, combining the two and what worked the best.
Well,
interesting.
Which is a normal process, but they go to it a length just because the stories I hear about hours on those sets. Like, they go a lot.
Hmm.
That makes sense because I've shot... what little I've done. I mean, I have a digital series. I mean, actors always come up with some things that are better than what you came up with, you know? So, and the people on that show are so funny. Ugh. Why wouldn't you let them go off a little bit? There's at least six good improvisers on that show. So
I think the show I would champion the most that I've been really re-enjoying is, It's Always Sunny. I know a lot of people are all over the place in this, but I just feel like the way they're able to continue that show and keep it at the level it's
amazing.
At absolutely blows my mind. And then I was watching it up until, I haven't seen the newest season, but the one that's on Netflix. I mean, I don't understand the longevity of that show and how it stays so fresh. It never feels tired to me. That show is perpetually funny and brilliant. I don't know how they do it. It's absolutely genius.
Well, the show I'm really loving, and I liked the first season, but F is for Family, the second season.
The Bill
season.
Burr show.
Yeah. That's on Netflix.
So good now.
Yeah.
So good. I feel like Bill Burr is doing like six different characters. He has blossomed as a animation actor. I did it. I sat in on a table read for the second season. And
damn.
I was like, the second season is going to be amazing because it was jumping off the page. And they get the best voiceover actors ever. You know? I think King of the Hill was great.
Oh, interesting. People loved King of the Hill. I never watched it, but people were very passionate about that show.
And I think I'm always surprised by how great South Park is, and I don't keep up with it the way I used to, but it's still got some great episodes.
No, there's some really, really good writing. There are some really, really great shows and some shows that are staying alive in a way that I'm very impressed by. I think the last show I'd bring up that I find really contentious and interesting is BoJack Horseman.
I love it. And then sometimes I'm like, you know, but
it hurts to such a level. I find very impressive.
It hurts. What do you mean by that?
Like just like the pain, existential pain of that show.
Oh,
just
yeah.
The fact that they kick you when you're down and then they throw some dirt in your eyes. Like the show just abuses you as an audience, but it's so, yet they're like joy in making jokes like Princess Caroline or, you know, Penguin is run by a bunch of stressed out penguins, like things like that, the silliness and yet the existential anguish.
Yeah. It rides a lot of lines.
It's so brilliantly married. I don't know. The show just really works for me.
Can you talk a little bit about maybe other writers or just people in the comedy world that they've influenced you in your style of writing, the things that you think are funny?
Yeah, Greg Daniels, you know, who created King of the Hill and The Office, you know, that guy is a huge influence for me. The Seinfeld guys who've gone on to a lot of other things, and by that I mean, you know, Alec Berg and Jeff Schaefer, who ran Seinfeld in the 90s, and now they're Jeff Schaefer, I believe, is... No, Alec and Jeff are running the room at Silicon Valley.
Yeah, because Alec Berg and... oh, my God.
I've been trying to get them on my podcast forever. And then another guy who was running the room at Seinfeld, and all these guys are Harvard guys.
They're always from Harvard.
I don't hold it against them. Some other Seinfeld Harvard grads that are running the room at Veep that replaced the original showrunner because I think Armando Iannucci left the show.
He did leave the show. Yeah. He's back in. Yeah. I think he's back in England now. I think America Armando was too much.
Armando Iannucci's brilliant, in my opinion.
Yes.
Who else do I like? You know, I think Tina Fey and Robert Carlock are geniuses.
Yes.
You know?
I think we'd agree.
Yeah.
We're on board with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, and he's not really, I don't know if he's not strictly a comedy writer, he's a drama writer, but the guy who created Breaking Bad, Vince Gilligan.
Yeah.
You know, I think he can do comedy or drama. He's done both, you know. I really like this show. I'm not saying they're like idols of mine, but I really like at least the web version of a show called High Maintenance, which is on HBO.
Yes.
And I haven't really had a chance to see the rest of the episodes, but I thought it was a brilliant digital series. And by the way, the term web series is kind of a pejorative now, which I had to learn. Like I saw, I call things digital series. Those are kind of like the rock stars, I guess, for me.
I like that. That's a good answer.
That's a really good answer and really good people to look into and kind of track. I love how many people have graduated from Seinfeld. It's just like it became its own grad school. That's right. Not even the right way to say it. But so many people, you find out they have their roots in like Roseanne or Seinfeld or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, those are smart guys. They're great comedy writers. They come from an era when a lot of Harvard people worked in the business and we all resented them. And that's fine. So
I love it. Are we ready for 30-30?
Let's do
30-30.
30-30. 30-30. 30-30. 30-30. Good girl. All right, your turn,
Kels.
What's your
30-30? I must have been watching a bunch of YouTube or something the other day because all of a sudden I heard Jack McBrayer's voice and he is the current...
He just cut through above.
I'm like, Kenneth, no, Jack, what are you doing? And he... That sounded weird. He is the current voice of Baskin Robbins.
Shut up. And that's actually a really amazing choice.
He does all of these like 15-second commercials where it's talking about their flavor of the month. And then he does, there's a couple of slightly longer ones, but it's just kind of adorable. And he just kind of giggles his way through it. And he's like, mama's favorite, this. Like, it's just adorable. But every little 15-second commercial ends with like, mocha, coca, frappuccino, that's Starbucks, like a mint chocolate chip ice cream, yes please. And I'm like, oh, that's a Amy Poehler's book name, but everyone ends with yes please, and I think it's adorable. And I'll post a couple links to a few of them because they're just kind of cute, and I love Jack McBrayer.
It's a perfect match for his like sweet charm, his ice cream,
right? It's kind of adorable.
Plus the money he must be making from that,
right?
Really good.
He's doing all right.
He's doing great.
I love it. Did you have anything, Scott? Do you have anything? 30-30?
Yeah, any like anything you've seen with anyone from the cast or the writers of 30 Rock in recent months?
I was in Japan, and I saw Alec Baldwin in a Japanese ad.
Oh, crazy!
Shut up for
like shoju. Yeah, because they.
Shut up! Please tell us more.
I couldn't decipher it because I don't speak Japanese, but I put on Japanese TV for like 2 minutes, and it looked like a really funny ad. I don't know if you guys know this, but like since the 80s. Big, huge actors go, you know, if you've seen Lost in Translation.
I was going to say, was this a Lost in Translation style thing?
That's a thing. You know, you can see old commercials from the 80s and 90s of people like Schwarzenegger going over, like big action stars, Bruce Willis and stuff, and they get paid like $2-3 million for a freaking Suntory whiskey commercial. It's like easy money.
It's the dream.
Well, it's in Friends. Joey has the Ichiban blue lipstick.
Yeah.
On 30 Rock, doesn't she do? Oh, no.
Jenna does the karaoke videos.
There we go. Yeah, she does all those commercials. Mm-hmm. No,
they
it must
didn't
be amazing
love those,
money.
Japanese karaoke videos.
That's crazy. He did a Japanese commercial that we're going to have to find that.
I'll have to try and find it. I will.
Yeah,
I will.
For sure. Was it good or was it weird?
The commercial?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked funny.
Does it have to be one or the other? Can't it be good and weird?
No. Yeah, I mean, like, but I do mean, like, was this like, this is a really cool commercial, like, it worked? Or was it like, oh, God. Because some of those commercials, you're just like, no.
He looked like he was really funny. He was being, like, Alec Baldwin.
God, he's so good at that.
But, like, being hyper Alec Baldwin, you know? I was into it.
I was into it.
I'm not going to lie.
Dude, we gotta find this. I'm really excited now. He is like a Bill Murray-esque person, so makes sense.
And then I saw Tommy Lee Jones on an ad, a print ad, like all over Tokyo and all over Japan. They've got vending machines filled with drinks in them, so nobody's thirsty ever.
Aren't there no trash cans everywhere either? Isn't that
no trash cans?
Yeah. What do you do with
them? They take it home and throw it away.
Yeah, right?
That's like
really the weirdest thing ever. Or you can go into a store and they'll be like, "Hi." And they'll throw it away. And they're, like, everyone's super polite and nobody drops anything on the ground in Japan. But there was a real, like, you know, intense-looking Tommy Lee Jones thing for, I think it was Suntory whiskey.
Damn.
Suntory's a big presence in Japan.
They like those grizzled older white dudes for these ads.
Grizzled older rich white dudes.
Right.
Rich before or after these commercials.
Yeah.
Both. For sure.
I love it.
That's really cool. I'm going to look these up.
Definitely.
today's episode.
Season 3.
Generalissimo.
10, Generalissimo. Air date was February 5th, 2007. Director was Todd Huttard. He also ends up directing Reaganing in 30 Rock. And
yes.
then he did Kimmy Has a Birthday on A Break with Kimmy Schmidt. And he did like 7 episodes of Go On as well. And writer.
Oh, man. That show. I forgot about that show. Mm-hmm.
The one season it got.
Oh, Go On.
And writer was Robert Carlock.
Yes. That's why this episode is so effing good.
Right? My recap is that Tracy is facing the harsh reality that he's not as young as he used to be. Liz goes a bit too far in trying to make a relationship happen with her hot neighbor. And Jack has to find a way to win over Elisa's abuela through the Generalissimo.
Oh, man. This episode. This was like the Emmy nomination episode they sent in for Alec Baldwin.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Genius.
It's genius.
It's so good. Should we like start with the main storyline, or do we want to start with the little one and then we can jump into Generalissimo?
Well, here, let's start with this. Scott, what are your overall thoughts on this one?
Pretty flawless.
Yeah.
What I liked about it, and you'll cover it, is that the A and the B story overlapped. So Liz's, I guess the A story is Liz's desire to get the John Hamm neighbor.
Yeah.
Girl, you know,
for her,
I can't blame
like
her.
Co-opting the way the Generalissimo
and then what did he do?
Yeah, like, gets people gets, you know, like her co-opting that and it blowing up in her face was just a brilliant conceit, I thought. And it tied everything up beautifully together.
I had forgotten that happened in this episode. When I was watching it, I'm like, oh, that's right, there's that overlapping. And I had forgotten about the whole Tracy storyline too, but
yeah. And I just think that yeah, the whole thing of like the abuela is just so funny.
Oh, know? My gosh.
And using the telenovela is just, and using Alec Baldwin in the telenovela is a likeness. I'm like, how do it? Sometimes you watch a show and you're like, God damn it, how do they come up with that?
You right. Why did, like, I'm glad you did, but how was that even
like,
on your train of thought?
How did you pull that trick? You know, and then not only that, but making her use the Generalissimo's techniques and then it gets creepy at the end and then they plant the Rohypnol and it was just like it's as textbook an episode as you'll ever want to see.
Yeah. That's, I feel like one of the writers must have been going through a telenovela phase or something like that. They must have been watching it on their own and then thought, I bet there's a way to make it happen.
That's what happens. That's what you're fighting against, people. Like, you are fighting against 20 brilliant writers in a room coming up. That's how, or 10 or 12 coming up with this shit together. That's what you're fighting when you come up with a spec script, something that good. Other than that, you guys will be fine. You guys will be doing really well in the business.
Well, but I'm also thinking, you're saying, you know, maybe they're watching that, but what you were just talking about in the previous episode about Selma Hayek's background as a telenovela actress, I wonder if there was like this real conversation of like, we have this incredible, because they've had guest stars on the show, but this is their first real arc with someone of like weight, right? They have like the occasion, the one Steve Martin, the one Oprah, but they have Selma Hayek and they have her for an arc, right? And I wonder if there was a conversation of what has she done? How can we use her? And I think that would so easily lead. I don't know. I think the way they just deal with Latin American culture in this is super funny and super like loving, but super entertaining. Like just that last thing where she's like, the news, it is too sad. And so they show photos of beautiful Latin American babies.
Right.
It's exactly what an abuela would say.
It's exactly what an abuela would want. It's just so funny. And so there's this really loving, this is 30 Rock. Again, we've talked about this. Carlock and Faye sometimes get in trouble with how they talk about different cultures. But I think this is them at their best when they're doing it, is it's really loving. It's really insightful. And it's really funny.
Did they get in trouble with different cultures? Have they gotten into hot water?
They've gotten into hot water, particularly with Kimmy Schmidt. They've gotten in a lot of hot water.
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't know if they wouldn't have gotten in trouble now, but, you know, so they did that episode in, what, 2009? And the landscape for how people get offended at everything has changed so completely in the last, like, 8 years. You know, it's... I wonder if they came out with that episode and you wouldn't have seen like 3 blogs like, we have a problem with blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. But anyway, I digress.
No, it's reasonable. I think it's really fair to say it's so interesting to watch something like this and be aware that there's a change in how we have these conversations now and to see how has the show, particularly, I mean, it's easy to compare it with like Kimmy Schmidt. How has the show changed to deal with that and how has this show changed to talk about issues like that?
Has the show changed? Has Kimmy Schmidt changed to deal with that?
Yes and no. I think they've stayed pretty true to their course, but it's interesting to they talk a lot about these sort of issues a little more, sincerely.
What do they get upset about? A black gay character?
No, about it was a
it's
Jenna's
the it's
mom.
The one-liners. It's the
oh no, was I thought oh, it was the Jenna? It's Jenna's family line is where family is where they got in trouble because Jenna's Native American heritage.
Yeah. Oh, and Kimmy Schmidt. Sorry.
Kimmy Schmidt. Yeah. Oh no, the one-liners here and there haven't been too much.
Jenna in 30 Rock or
Jane Krakowski's sorry. Character. And that's where you were gonna be. Jane Krakowski's character and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is a blonde lady who is Native American.
Mm-hmm. Oy vey. All right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. But all of that to say is, I think this is the way they discuss the culture is really funny and warm and charming in this, and I really, really enjoy the abuela, and I really enjoy the power of the abuela in this episode over Jack. And mm-hmm. I love that shot of Jack and the abuela where she's saying something, he goes, "Yo soy Jack." So earnestly. It's so sweet. He's so sweet. And that's something I saw in an article that talked about Jack as a romantic, and that's the really lovely thing about mm-hmm. him. That's how they even, did you see that too?
Mm-hmm.
I love that because he is such a hard ass. He's this American capitalist. But then they make him such a romantic, and he's so hopeful for love, and he falls in love so quickly because it's a TV show, but also because it's sweet.
When I was trying to think about that, I was like, is this the first time we see Jack in love? And it's not. Like, no. We've already seen him with Cece and with Phoebe, but with Phoebe, the love was kind of weird, but with Cece, he
was really real.
Trying to make it work. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really charming.
Yeah, I liked it.
I did too.
I think I didn't see any like gaps in the show. Like I did not see any points where I was like, they're like jumping over a plot hole. You know?
Yeah, like in the last episode.
I feel like it was all tied together very beautifully. I thought, the only thing that I thought I would have run, but I didn't. But like even the ending where the John Hamm character says, I was going through your mail and this is a person I would have dated.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been interested in.
I love that he comes to her level.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty romantic.
Strange hair on him too. Like, what a weird hair.
That's floppy hair.
Yeah, that hair was in back then. And yeah. I'm like, this guy's so good looking, he can overcome that haircut.
Oh, maybe not as much of a Hamm fan.
I'm cool with Hamm.
I'm
Team Hamm. Yeah.
Aren't we all?
I was having dinner with
John Hamm.
Someone I was dating years and years ago.
Was it Little Dom's?
And a nice restaurant I've seen him at Little Dom's. That's weird.
He's got a table there.
Oh, he does?
That's what I've heard.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So I saw him at another restaurant. I was taking my girlfriend out at the time for Valentine's Day dinner, and she saw John Hamm. And she couldn't keep her eyes off of him.
You're like, hi.
Like, what a terrible. You know what? I'm not even offended by that. Whatever.
What a terrible thing to happen on Valentine's Day, but also
I got hammed. I got hammed.
Maybe
hard.
We should just ask
Ham.
John, I'm so sorry. Just here's the thing. You're so handsome. For all the men's sake on Valentine's Day, could you just stay inside?
Right.
Just help out the men in general.
Right. February 15th, all you.
You go out, do your thing, but 14th, stay indoors. It's just the kindest thing you can do.
Right. That's so fun. That's such a great idea.
He's a tall dude. He's a very big guy.
Oh, I believe
He's very handsome. Yeah, I think I just wrote on the across my page, handsome.
Oh, my Lord, you did.
Because he's so handsome. And I can't believe it took him so long to break into the industry. Like, all the stories about, it took him years to get good jobs. And then they had to fight hand, tooth, and nail to get him as Don Draper on Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. And now I think everyone just knows how stupid we were because they love him so much.
Yeah.
It happens sometimes.
It happens. Good people stay hidden for a while, but I just think he's so wonderful on this. I literally wrote, he's so perfect. I think I'm in love.
I think you might be.
I love John Hamm.
That's
he's
cool.
So talented.
Whatever.
Thanks.
You won't be the first. You won't be the last.
No, I want to be the last. Damn it. I will win. Mm. I want to go back to the really great Conan joke. And how
oh
they
my
just
gosh,
shit on Conan
yes.
constantly on the show, and yes. it's literally perfect.
What was the Conan joke?
That not many, that you got the special tour. Not many people get to see Conan without his wig on.
Do they just make fun of him or are they shitting on him?
Literally make fun of him.
They
sorry.
Love him. Because he was on 30 Rock before.
He was on it before because then the Tonight Show happened during this whole season. So he was on 30 Rock for that first episode. There's always that running joke that Liz and him dated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I love because that makes sense to me that they would date.
Got it.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. So, okay. So the Tracy storyline is weird. I just straight up did not remember this at all. That there's interns and their former Wall Street guys. She's like, aren't they a little old for being interns? And I thought, aren't they a little young for being like former finance guys? Mm-hmm. But they think Tracy has this reputation. And so come out and drink with us and do all this stuff. And Tracy is like, I am too old for this.
Why would I be afraid to put fire near my mouth?
It was so specific, that joke. Mm-hmm. Because they were too old to be interns. Those guys are like B school grads. Mm-hmm. They'll have MBAs and they were 27 years old.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they're like. They're like, they have no world. They have no real world experience, but they work really hard. You know, mm-hmm.
They look good in suits.
Yeah. And they look good in suits. They remind me of guys that have been working in the mailroom in the last few years at agencies that are like that. They're real bro-y, you know, they end up becoming agents. And you're like, you're an overgrown boy and you're wearing an $800 suit. Those guys all got put out of work in the recession.
Yeah, I love the joke later on that it's they don't know how to do anything and there are no jobs left on Wall Street.
It's an interesting recession joke. This is like where, I don't know, I always enjoy recession jokes. It means, I don't know, it's like a historical
thing. It's a very New York kind of joke.
Mm-hmm. I know the Wall Street, the bros,
yeah,
the finance bros. It is very specific to this.
Yeah, incredibly New York.
Mm-hmm. So the thing that's important to mention that storyline is that Tracy is coming back and he's telling them about what they did the night before, that like scotch is disgusting. They have box seats at the Rangers games and it's so cold. And
the way he delivers that too. It's so cold.
It's so cold. And they're like, and the Rohypnol.
Rohypnol.
Rohypnol. Sorry. Rohypnol. Yeah. Yep. I read that.
Scott,
funny.
You said that so confidently.
I have nothing to add to that.
But that was important that she goes, oh my goodness, these are roofies. And she puts it in her purse, which is important for later on. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Which is why it's in her purse. And he's like, so that's not going to help me with my headache?
Also, that's really dark that they have roofies on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it fits the Wall Street bro stereotype. But like, it's a really, really dark joke that kind of gets glanced. Like the darkness of it gets glanced over.
I'm cool with it. it's like a joke that they probably had to fight with the studio executive about.
Oh, probably. But they probably got away with it because of needing it later on.
It's
for the John Hamm storyline. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's for sure funny.
And then the guys say, and we're going to do shooters at blockheads, lay a base, and meet up with my brohams at the Cornell Club. And Tracy's like, oh, yeah. And he's like, I have no idea what either one of us just said.
Tracy makes a good bro, though. He's able to keep up in the end, right?
He really does.
Also, that's a in-joke, too, because that's some Harvard writers making fun of Cornell.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm.
Because Cornell is a very fratty school.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Oh, we've seen The Office. I know what Andy Menard was like.
Princeton's even more frattier.
Which is where Jack comes from. So that works.
Yeah, Cornell's a very fratty school. So that's kind of a dig at them.
Interesting. Oh, I wouldn't have caught that. I appreciate that. What else, Kels?
We learned that. So Kenneth is trying to help Tracy with his hangover. And he talks about his uncle... what's his face? Uncle somebody. And he's like, and his cure for hangovers was 2 cups of boiled possum meat with 1 mesalid of ragweed, stir in alcohol. And you see him go, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, hair of the dog, right?
Yeah. Oh, gross.
Wait, no, not literally.
I don't know what you're referencing.
No, the hair of the dog is what they call when you have a hangover, you have a little bit of alcohol the next day, and it's called the hair of the dog.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. Silence between us was rife.
Because me, like, I was like, I don't understand.
You're
going to
be cutting some of that
dead
air out.
Oh, I mean, I think
she'll make
it
longer.
I like the awkwardness a lot of the time. It makes me happy.
Yeah, that was a weird moment.
It was a really weird moment. Thank you for being a part of it. But let's talk a lot. Do you want to do the Generalissimo, or do we want to talk about Jack and John? No, not Jack. Liz and John Hamm.
Liz and John Hamm. Let's do Generalissimo because we kind of started on Liz's already. So Let's do Generalissimo.
Let's do it. This is just genius and it's perfect. And it made me want to watch Soap Dish again.
I don't know what that is.
It's the whole idea of the Generalissimo looking like Jack is so fucking funny.
So fantastic.
Yeah.
So Jack is trying to figure out why Elisa's grandma hates him. It's not until she goes on this tour and walks inside and she has to watch her show, and he's realizing that the soap she's watching, the main actor, the bad guy in it, looks exactly like Jack. And so that's when she's realizing, that's why you don't like me, because you think I'm like the Generalissimo. So what can we do to fix this? And in true Jack fashion, it's, well, let's just buy the TV show. Mm-hmm. And adjust it to try and show that I'm not a bad guy.
Right.
And so he tasks Liz with, you got to write a new episode by this afternoon. And she gets the script. She works with Elisa on it. And Elisa's like, well, I edited it. I translated it into Spanish. And I took out all the Star Wars references. And then when they go to watch the episode live and the grandma's watching it to try and change their opinion on things, you realize that the Generalissimo has kind of gone off the deep end. He wasn't ready to die.
I mean, I don't blame him. That's a cushy job, right? There. Working right. Soaps are my dream, man. That's a great gig.
It goes on forever.
It's a day job. Like, it's just such a. You get to have all this creative freedom. Mm-hmm. I would love to be a soap writer. I think that'd be a great job.
Generalissimo tries to help him with his problem.
I know that he gets in on it, right? Also, love how much felt like Tanner they just stuck on Alec Baldwin to make him be the Generalissimo.
It's so great.
But he does. He gets in the weeds with Jack on, like, here's how we're gonna fix this.
Yeah,
we're gonna.
He's like, I know how to deal with an abuela. Like, we got this. I'm going to love her granddaughter. I'm going to meet the grandmother. I'm going to ask for pictures of her grandkids.
And I love that they made him super gay.
Right.
The way he says super gay is so gay. Funny.
You are very gay.
Because he makes the Belle of Amherst reference, which I had to look that up, and I still couldn't figure out what it was.
The woman in play about...
I never get references.
Because he makes a reference about Julie Harris and the Belle of Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
And it's a one woman play about the life of Emily Dickinson.
Jesus. Going for the deep cuts.
They really did it. Oh, my God. That's so good.
Love that the actor Hector whatever the actor's name is, who the fake actor's name who plays Generalissimo, mm-hmm. how he has a lucrative endorsement deal with Sabor de Soledad,
and then they just pretty much hear him say just semen de
is bowl. That a real chip?
No, it's Liz loves Sabor de Soledad. She eats that constantly, and that's when she thinks she's pregnant at one point, because Sabor de Soledad has bull semen in it. Yeah, Taste of Loneliness is what it's called. Is what it translates as. But there's bull semen in it, and it stops women's periods, so that like there's like all this, it's a running gag joke during out the entire show.
I didn't even know that.
It's so funny, and so it's great that he's the spokesperson of it. And again, just that cut of him just saying semen of the bowl was so funny. Oh my goodness.
Oh man, it's kind of amazing there. And I did like though that when they're watching the episode and they're realizing that Generalissimo is kind of going off the deep end, they make a comment where it's like, we probably should have had somebody on set who spoke Spanish to realize that Generalissimo was going off track. But even like a deaf person would be able to tell that he didn't die. And so they should have known that he didn't follow the instructions.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Yeah. So Liz is in the storyline with John Hamm it's cutting back and forth between the Generalissimo and Liz and John Hamm as they're figuring different things.
Dr. Baird. I have to remember Dr. he has a Andrew name other Baird. Than John Hamm.
Oh, we get an I want to go to there from Liz.
Yes.
Too.
Because it's the first time it's being used romantically, too. It's always been a food thing.
That's
and now
right.
suddenly it's not. It's now a man thing.
Now it's a man thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because she accidentally gets his mail, Jenna starts opening it and finds mm-hmm. all these things as to why she would like him. Muppets Take Manhattan, Caddyshack, and a documentary about how pies are made. And then that's the I want to go to there. And I couldn't find a documentary about pies, but there is a TV show called A Few Good Pie Places.
Send it to me, please. Thank you.
It's a PBS show.
I want to watch it.
Yeah.
I was reading her story about how she got John Hamm for this. And basically, they were writing that. She talked about how they would write this with actors in mind and really hopeful to getting someone. And they kept writing this with, and then Hamm. But she had no idea if he could do it. She had no idea. She was like, we'll never get him in a million years. Okay. And then he was on break from Mad Men doing SNL. So she said she was calling studio, whatever it is, 42, whatever. She was calling SNL during the week while they're prepping, like, hey, is this guy actually funny? Can he do it?
Oh,
she was like, by Saturday, it was very clear. Yes, this guy is funny.
Good.
So right after that, they snagged him and got him during his hiatus from Mad Men.
Perfect.
And got him on the show.
Lorne Michaels pull.
I know, man. It's just always helpful to have him in your back pocket, isn't it?
Seems
to work out
it.
For people.
Mm. That kind of...
Did they shoot that in L.A. or New York?
Mad Men?
No, 30 Rock.
New York.
Okay.
Yeah, it's based out in the mixture of the little studios in Long Island City and then at 30 Rock itself.
Okay.
Yeah. The Buttercup Studios. I forgot they're called
Silver Cup.
Silver Cup. Yep, I was not that far off. I'm really proud of myself.
Some sort of cup of things.
Close.
I know.
At the end, oh, that Tracy decides to embrace his age at the end by, we hear it over the television in the background that he is becoming, that the Lehman Brothers Investment Bank is going to be managed by Tracy. He's now in charge of the bank, apparently.
It worked out. He just followed that path.
Yeah. And well, it makes me less sad.
The motivation for the joke is like, stranger things have happened.
That's
how they, that justified the joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this scene at the end, which because everything works out pretty easily once the Generalissimo helps out. It all works out really beautifully for Jack. The abuela works out. Mm-hmm. But the way this scene is orchestrated with Liz and with Dr. Baird, with this, like, she's fooling him just like the general, and then you see it, like, it keeps getting cut with the Generalissimo seducing the abuela, and then you've got Liz Lemon seducing Dr. Baird.
Yeah.
It's absolutely lovely. Like, I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that? Like, I think the writing of it is so perfect, the way they're you talked about a little bit, the way they're interstitched, what's the term?
Are you talking about the final scene?
The final scene where, no, right before that, during the date when she's like, oh, that's for another day. Her like little weird, like fake laugh. But come in, I just opened a bottle of wine. There's like 80 candles in the background.
Right.
And that scene, the way they like do it, like her seducing him and winning him over, and it's cut in and out with the Generalissimo seducing the abuela.
Yeah, they tie the two stories together because she's using the Generalissimo's technique.
It's just gorgeous the way
like
they do it.
So like one works and the other one is just like, this one's going to end badly.
Because nothing goes well for Liz.
Yeah, like it starts out going kind of okay, and then the creepy neighbor shows up with the dog, with Buster, who she has pretended that she lost because when reading John Hamm's mail, Dr. Baird's, Drew's mail, she learns he likes a dog.
And then she tries to put the dog in the drawer.
Let's put you back in your special kitchen cabinet. And then he's like, they've had some to drink. I thought it was kind of weird for them to be feeding each other on their first date. Like, I understand that for a romantic night, like later on in a relationship, but like you're on your first like non-date together.
But they're trying to give us all these signifiers of romance. They're like, oh, it's cooking. They're into each other. They've got good chemistry in the show.
They do have really good chemistry. And then, oh, you know what's funny? I kept thinking that this was the episode because this happens later on with Drew, with the whole thing with like, if you open up the one door while you're on the toilet, like the bathroom door opens or whatever. I kept thinking that scene was going to happen, but that happens later on.
Later.
Then Drew goes into Liz's room and he collapses and hits her purse and the purse, or no, he says, I need some Advil or whatever. It's in my purse. It's in my bag. He goes in there, grabs the roofies, takes some of that, and then suddenly feels weird, falls down, knocks the purse down, then sees his mail.
Well, this is interesting. We get to later, I won't go into detail, but later we get to the sense of the bubble, right? That he's been living in a bubble. And we see hints of that in this episode because he's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes roofies. He doesn't look at the bottle. He doesn't recognize immediately it's not Advil.
Right.
What kind of doctor doesn't know?
Do we ever learn what type of doctor he is?
He's pediatric.
Is he okay?
Children.
I couldn't remember if we learned it or not.
It's one of those things you buy it.
You buy it. But no, but I actually think it's really smart writing because later on we get to this idea that he's actually not a good doctor. He's actually in the bubble. And in a weird way, that kind of fits into the storyline because he doesn't recognize the roofies. You know, I don't even think we have to give it, we don't have to do suspension of disbelief for this. I think it's really good writing to who he is as a character when we see later.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
I can see that. That's a good point.
I think
like
it's smart. I mean, it probably was on accident, but I'm still going to believe it was
no,
on purpose.
No, I like it.
Because I think it's really interesting to who he is later.
Cool.
I think it should be intentional.
I hope so. But I just love that dress she's wearing. I just love that whole sequence with him. And then I love his face when he's scared. That's when you really see his chops. Like, he's already doing really well. But just that look of total fear on his face.
He's like, oh, this girl is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's Liz. She plays crazy really well.
Well, also, people don't realize back then what a surprise it was to play kind of like a doofy, vulnerable guy, because he was basically, you know, a mannequin with an ego. And
he was only Don Draper.
Yeah. You know, that's a very bad way to describe him. But yeah, he was Don Draper.
Yeah.
No, for sure. He did such a good job making sure he wasn't typecast. If anything, he's not really doing drama anymore. He's doing comedy a lot. Right? Maybe action. He's in Baby Driver coming up.
Is he really?
I'm psyched for that movie.
I'm so pumped about Baby Driver. It's going to be dope. But I think the other thing I noted is the fact that he kisses her on the head when they bring the dog in, which I thought was also very forward. Mm-hmm. And that immediately propels into it, be like, yes, my dog.
Right.
I love how much that move propels her forward.
But, yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, that was me. That was how I felt. I just thought this was, that scene was amazing.
Yeah, I loved that storyline. Mm-hmm. Every time we watch one of these episodes, I forget, like, oh, I loved that part of this episode, or I love this part of the show, and mm-hmm. I forget about that. So I was excited to see Jon Hamm. I was like, oh, right, he's in this episode, and mm-hmm. that's starting, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. But every time one of her boyfriends shows up, like, ah, oh, Jason Sudeikis is here. Like, Dean Winters is here. Like, oh, right, Jon Hamm now. Like, mm-hmm. she gets the most beautiful and hilarious men to like her for bits of time.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't she?
It's
right. That's yes. a very good.
Scott, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, are you going to run a double standard? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I want to say one more thing about this.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to really see, I think something this show does really uniquely, it's to what you were talking about before, Scott, about the switching of the straight man. And I think what's really, really unique about this show is that we really get Liz as our heroine. She's the straight man. She's the Michael Bluth of the show. And then really in this season, we're starting to see the crazy, and she kind of plays a villain every now and then. She's a mm-hmm. This is very villainous.
Absolutely.
Of her to do. And we love her, and we're so on board with her. We let it. But I like that they're willing to stretch their heroine into a little, she's villainous at moments, like we all are. But I really enjoy that character work. I think it's really interesting. And mm-hmm. it can be kind of hard to do, because I felt like when Arrested Development did that in season 4 with Michael Bluth, it struggled a little bit.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. But it really works in this. I don't know if you have any thought. I just think that's really, really unique and really lovely about this show.
It's great. Mm-hmm. It's great. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, I'm not going to say it's groundbreaking, but it's unique in that it's willing to make a hero into a bad person, which is what comedy should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with a lot of comedies that don't work is, like I said before, you're trying to put it's square pegs, not the show square pegs, but, you know, square peg into a round hole, where it's like the studio will be like, we don't want to make these people too bad because no one will like them. And it's like, well, characters being unlikable and doing stupid bad shit to a certain extent is why they're funny.
Mm-hmm.
And just throwing a bunch of wisecracks out of people's mouths doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Have them be bad through their... That's why Cheers works so well. You knew what each character was, and they were flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were allowed to be flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And Seinfeld, all of them sucked. You know?
It's very true. They really, really did.
I love... There was a joke. I don't remember what the joke was exactly. It's when Drew is in Liz's office at the end, and they're talking. And they make some reference about the bad grammar and Subway ads. Oh, I think because they get a letter back from somebody, and because Liz was upset about that.
The word whom needs a defender.
Yes. I have 100% done that, where there was an ad, because I drive, when I work out of our LA office, I take the Metro and stuff in. And on the Subway, there was an ad for the American Career College, and there was an apostrophe in the wrong place. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to their Facebook. And I was like, just so you know, like, if you're trying to promote higher education, you probably have somebody proofread your advertisements.
Yeah. Lord, did you ever hear back?
No.
Oh, they were embarrassed.
Yeah, and then, you know, when Tracy's, you should end that sentence with a pronoun. Like,
yeah, no, yeah. You should never end something with a preposition at, or, and then he, oh yeah, we'd be honored if you'd come with. You shouldn't end a sentence with a proposition at.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Tracy.
Oh, he's so fantastic.
I wonder if they just write jokes and they're like, this would fit Tracy. Like, sometimes the yep. jokes that he does, they're not even necessarily, it's just like, oh, he could say anything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It works so well
anything
with him.
Anything that guy says comes out of his mouth weird and funny.
Yep.
That's exactly what it is.
Any favorite lines?
Hmm?
Any favorite lines in this episode?
The preposition line was pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
I love, this isn't a line, but I love the part when the abuela gave her that gave Jack that weird brain.
The breaded calf brain.
Uh-huh. Oh.
I thought that that whole scene where she's opening the doctor's mail is really funny, you know? When she's like, and he rented a documentary about baking pies or something.
Yeah,
and
yeah, like, yeah. And she's just so captivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I will find that documentary. I like that she's like, he looks like a cartoon pilot.
Yes.
I thought it was so accurate way to describe. I think another description we'll get to later is when she describes him as looking like Prince Eric from Ariel. The Little Mermaid, yep. Which is so funny. He does look like that. So I enjoy them trying to find ways to discuss his handsomeness.
Yes.
I also really love, I will put my mouth on his mouth.
Yes, yes.
Like her, just her, her ability to be unsexy is just unparalleled. Like just the way she describes anything is so childlike and delightful.
It's so perfect.
It's so good.
I think my favorite lines were, Jack is explaining to Liz why the abuelo is so important. He's like, in Puerto Rico, elderly women are held in high esteem. You should go there, Lemon. They'd love you.
That's such a good burn.
And then when Jack is talking later to Liz, explaining why he loves her so much and why he likes Elisa, and he says, oh, I love it because of her adorably broken English. And she Elisa says, MetroCards are a real thing, Jack. You use them on the subway. And he thinks MetroCards is a fake word. And I think that's kind of amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think you guys got it.
Covered it. Perfect. Okay, perfect. Scott.
You want to plug things again?
Can you tell us where people can find you and where they can find your show?
Yeah. So I'm on the same network as Use Guys. So that's Boardwalk Audio. You can find shows on rightonpod.com. I also do a digital series that's won a bunch of awards. It's pretty funny, called Fully Formed Adults. You can go to fullyformedseries.com or go to Vimeo. Fully Formed Adults is on there. In very nice resolution. And my Twitter is @ScottBox. And I have a fun Instagram with lots of food and dogs and stuff. That, again, is @ScottBox.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You can find me places at Redheaded Blonde on Instagram and on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I'm @KimchiLucas everywhere. Radio Picture Show, second Wednesday of every month. And at The Virgil. So I'll post about it. If you follow me, you'll see it.
Perfect.
Nice.
And you can find our podcast places, Talk 30 Rock to Me. And you can send us emails at talk30rocktome@gmail.com.
Please rate, review, subscribe, do the whole thing, buy things on Amazon. You know the drill. We said this every time.
Yep. All right, cool. Thank you again, Scott. This was great having
you.
Hey,
it was great.
Thank
you so much for being on. Thanks so much.
Really appreciated your perspective. This was great.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. Bye, guys.
Have a good one.
Podcast. For more information and shows, visit BoardWalkAudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.